evidence, he always took his mom. He's the all-American bullet-headed Saxon mother's son.
All the children sing,
hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill?
Captain Marvel zapped him right between the eyes.
Zap! All the children sing.
Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill.
His mommy betted him.
If looks could kill, it would have been us instead of him.
All the children sing,
hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill? Bungalow Bill. Hey, Bungalow Bill, what did you kill?
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to Keith Giles offer his viewpoint about the film American Sniper and the slow death of the myth of redemptive violence.
So what does all this have to do with American Sniper? Well, as I sat there in the theater hearing people around me cheering and clapping, shouting out at the screen, urging Chris Kyle to pull the trigger to kill the 9-year-old kid with a grenade. Kill him! Shoot him! Shoot him! Or cheering, clapping, applauding spontaneously when the bullet slow motion flies through the air and blows apart the head of the evil sniper from the Iraqi side. And the applause that broke out at the end when the American flag is playing and taps, the American flag is waving and taps is playing and people are saluting and that whole rah-rah nationalism, America is God's nation. And it's, I don't buy it anymore. I don't believe it anymore. But I was in a room full of people tonight who definitely did. And I can understand why they do, because that's how I was raised. And if Jesus hadn't stopped me and changed me and turned me around, I would have been standing and cheering right along with them. So, this movie, on the one hand, if you could take a step back, I think, and just say, I think because it's about a real person, and it's about a real event, and events, and real people, and a real place, and something that really happened, that our government really did, and our soldiers actually participated in. It's the reality of it that makes it difficult for me to accept and just say, well, that was awesome, dude. You know, 12-year-old me, 15-year-old me, even 20-year-old me, would have said, what a kick-ass movie. And if it had been a film about maybe a fictitious person, let's just write a screenplay about a soldier who believes in what he's doing and is doing the best he can with what he's got, you could say, yeah, wow, what a great performance, what a great movie, what a great directing. But it isn't. It's a real person. It's a real story, real people, real human beings, both sides of the war. And it definitely makes an impact on you. It just doesn't, I don't believe it makes all the impacts it should on in the ways that it should or could. There's a couple of places in the film. In fact, right at the beginning, it's the very, very kind of opening sequence of the film where I feel the film participates in the same propaganda that its director, Clint Eastwood, has said he wanted to expose. And so I disagree with – I don't believe him. I believe he actually made a film that caters to and panders to the American propaganda that we're the good guys and that whatever we do, because we do it, it's good. And that the bad guys, whatever they do, because they're savages, we've dehumanized them. They are – that's evil. There's a scene at the beginning where we see a very young – it's a flashback sequence. We see a very young Chris Kyle being taught by his father how to hunt. He makes his first kill as a young man, kills a deer. And then we flash forward the very next scene, and Chris Kyle with his brother, his younger brother, and his mom and dad are sitting in a church service, hearing the pastor give a sermon. And young Chris Kyle reaches forward and sees a little blue pocket-sized Gideon New Testament in the front there next to the hymnals. And he picks it up and he puts it in his pocket and he keeps it. And he keeps it the entire movie. You see him, even as an adult, he's got it stuffed in his you never see him reading it, but he's got it. He's carrying it. And the scene after that is his father, Chris Kyle's father, giving a lecture to his two boys, saying that there are three kinds of people in this world. There are sheep, the people that are too weak to stand up for themselves. There are the wolves, the bullies, who prey upon them. And then there are sheepdogs, who are strong enough and tough enough to protect the sheep from the wolf. And this is told in such a way, when you juxtapose it with a church building, a pastor preaching a sermon, a New Testament Bible being picked up by a small child and put in his pocket, a father talking to his sons about sheep and wolves, that the assumption is that what is being said is part of the Christian story, and it's woven into the fabric of the American story, and that America is the sheepdog. There are sheep and there are wolves. Now, sheep, of course, are good, and wolves, of course, are evil and satanic. And sheepdogs are also good, but sometimes they need to be their dogs, so they're kind of close to a wolf. They're not quite a sheep and not quite a wolf. They're somewhere in between. And unfortunately, with that story, not only is it wrong, and not only is it not a Christian story, the Christian story is that we are sheep. And like it or not, we're sheep. Man, we don't like that Jesus called us sheep. We want to be wolves. We want to strut. We want to put on the leather jacket, and we want to crank the throttle on our motorcycle, and we want to rum, here we are, baby. We're here to kick some butt. But that's not who we are. That's not who Jesus was. And Jesus told us that he was sending us out like sheep among wolves, not to be sheepdogs, but to be sheep. Not to overcome evil with evil, but to overcome evil with good. That is what we are truly called to do. And the film, of course, does dehumanize the enemy. I think back again when I was a kid, when I loved cowboys and Indians. I loved John Wayne. I loved pretending to be a cowboy, playing, you know, cowboys and Indians with my friends. And the Indians were the savages. The Indians were the evil, you know, inhuman. We have to dehumanize our enemies. And so, therefore, the cowboy was the good guy, defending his land, defending his wife, defending his children from these savage, murderous Indians who just only wanted to kill them. I don't know, because they loved freedom, or maybe because they just didn't understand our civilized ways or what have you. But when I became an adult and I read American history and I discovered what really happened to the Native Americans in this country, I realized the truth. And I want to go back and rewatch those Westerns again, because now I'm going to cheer for those Native Americans, because they were the heroes. They were the good guys. We were the bad guys. You know, I would love to see them make a movie. I would love to see American Sniper, a movie made from the perspective of the Iraqi people. I would love to see a movie where the first 20 minutes we meet a wonderful, loving father with his beautiful wife and their three or four kids. And that we get to meet their kids one by one, and we get to hear about their hopes and their dreams of the future, and see them sharing meals together, laughing together, playing together, just living life as a family together. Maybe they sit down ready for their meal and bow their heads to ask a blessing, and a bomb blows up the side of their house, and American soldiers run in with machine guns and shove them up the noses of their parents and flip over their 9-year-old son because he's a male, and tie his hands behind his back, and then take over their home for the next week, eating all of their food, taking all of whatever they want because they can, and yet call themselves freedom fighters and call themselves liberators, because that's the movie I'd like to see, and that's the movie I would like for the American people to see. I don't expect we're going to see that movie. And if we did, I don't think it would be as well received as American Sniper was. But we've always done that. My whole life I've been told that, you know. I was told the Native Americans, the Indians, were the bad guys. I was told later on in my life that the black people, they were the bad guys. They were the Mexicans. You know, black people, they're shifty and they'll lie to you and lie to your face. All of them carry a razor blade. They'll cut you if they can. They'll steal from you. You got to keep your eye on them all the time. Mexicans are lazy. They'll do everything they can to get out of work. You know, my whole life I was told these things. And now, of course, it's Muslims. Muslims, you know, their religion teaches them to hate Christians. Their scriptures tell them to kill people. It's a hateful, murderous religion. All of them are hateful. All of them are evil. They're all savages. That's what we're told in American Sniper. They're savages. But let me tell you what I've learned. I have had Muslims in my home joining us in our house church. I've eaten a table with Muslims, and they're just like me. And I've met Mexican people. I grew up with them. You know what? They're just like me. I met black people. They're just like me. And Native Americans, they're just like me. And they're just like you. We're all human beings. And none of us are savages and monsters. Now we are, if that's all we need to tell ourselves, because it makes it easier to blow them up and shoot their children and destroy their homes and take what we want and exploit their resources. I tell you what, this movie, if there's some good things I could say about it, I think there are some good things about the film. I do think the film at least attempts to at least address the fact that there is such a thing as post-traumatic stress disorder, although we really don't see it. We see the effects of it, but we really don't see that Chris Kyle made much progress in that area. We see him making a little bit of progress. But we don't really see how, and we don't really get any sense of how we are supposed to help veterans who have post-traumatic stress disorder. And I want to say also that I've heard some people say that, well, you know, American soldiers are killing themselves. By the way, more American soldiers have been killed by their own guns because they've killed themselves after coming back from war than have been killed in war overseas in Afghanistan and Iraq. That should tell you something. And I've heard people say, when they hear that statistic, I've heard them say, well, it's because our government doesn't take care of them when they come home. And you know what? I'm sorry, bull. That is not why. Let me tell you why they're blowing their brains out. Simply because when they get over there, the things they are asked to do and the things that they have been told to do are different than what they were told they were doing when they first signed up. And when they get over there and they are given orders that are atrocious, when they are commanded to take the lives of children, families in the name of whatever. That's what jacks with you. That's what messes with you. The war is what is messing with them. War is what is killing them. It's just not killing them with a bullet. It's killing them by ripping their heart and their soul out of their body that when they come home, they don't know how to deal with it. Now, yeah, we could maybe deal with it a little better if we gave them better counseling and we made it more mandatory. There's all sorts of things I could say that, yes, would be better if we took care of our veterans. And if we're going to give ourselves a pat on the back and say that we are pro-military and we love our soldiers and we support our troops, which is the rhetoric of our Congress, that we support our troops. It's the rhetoric of our president that we support our troops. But then we really don't support our troops. We make their children and their wives stand in lines to get food from the food bank to feed their kids because we're not paying them enough. Office is backed up, right? And there's really no change about how they're supposed to fix that and help that. So they're not getting their benefits. They're not getting what's due them. We really, you know, let's fix that. If we want to say we really support our troops, then let's do that. I agree with that. Yes, let's actually do that if we're going to say we support our troops. But what we really mean, what Congress really means, and what our president really means when they say we're going to support our troops is we're going to spend multiple hundreds of billions of dollars that we're going to pay to contractors like Raytheon and Boeing and Northrop Grumman and all these other guys, Lockheed. We're going to give them billions of dollars. Those are corporations. Those are not veterans. That's not our troops. We will spend ridiculous amounts of money. And by the way, that money that we're spending on a war machine that is already dwarfs all the other 12 nations in the world combined. And by the way, those are mostly our allies. The money that we're spending on that is money that we could be spending on education, food. You know, more than 50% of school children in America are living in poverty. Do you know why that is? Because we're spending multiple hundreds of billions of dollars on rockets and tanks and machine guns and jets that the Pentagon has already said they do not want or need. But it doesn't matter what they want. It doesn't matter what anyone wants, what the American people want. What matters is what those corporations want, because unfortunately they seem to run our country. And I'm sorry, I don't normally spend my time and energy on a podcast talking about politics. And if I haven't said it before, let me say it here. Personally, I put no hope or faith in any political party or system or politician or government. I do not believe that even the most well-meaning politician, no matter what their party or platform might be, has the ability to change this nation. It just isn't going to happen. The gospel is the only hope for this nation and for our people. The only thing that's going to change our hearts, because that's what it's going to take, is the gospel of Jesus. And so if it sounds like I'm being political, I'm not leaning left or right or middle, because I don't think voting for anybody or subscribing to any political platform or ideology will make a bit of difference. And that's just my opinion. And that's one thing that I wish Christians could do, is just let go of the rhetoric, let go of their political party. Forget this garbage about the right or the left or the middle or whatever. Forget the political posturing. Forget all of that. Go to Jesus. Read the Gospels. Read the red letters. If there's any hope for this nation, you're going to find it there. You're going to find it there. I don't believe voting is going to change anything. And that's a whole other story. I just had these thoughts in my mind and my heart after seeing this movie. I say this a lot, that we're all in process, and I'm certainly in process. And the Keith of 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, wouldn't have said these things and wouldn't have agreed with these things that I'm saying now. I have learned and I'm growing in so many different ways. And I hope and pray I'm going to keep growing and that Jesus is going to keep on doing this work in my heart, rearranging the furniture, breaking down the lies, breaking down the myths. We live in an empire, and empires do what empires do to continue to be the strongest empire they can. And that's, you can wrap that up in music, and you can wrap that up in a flag, and you can wrap that up in God Bless America if you want to. But in the end, I don't believe God blesses any of that, or that Jesus wants anything to do with any of that. Jesus has rejected the kingdoms of this world. And I love that verse in Revelation. I just looked it up the other day and shared it, where it's talking about how, you know, hallelujah, the kingdoms of this world have been replaced by the kingdom of our God. And that's what's going to have to happen. I mean, face it, for the kingdom of Jesus to advance, for the kingdom of God to fully come and reign, every other kingdom on this planet will have to fall. And America is one of those kingdoms. It's going to have to collapse and fail and burn and fall into the ashes and fade away until no one could ever even tell you what the Pledge of Allegiance was, because they couldn't even remember it, because it's gone. It will be erased from history. There will be no Americans in heaven. There'll be no Germans in heaven. There'll be no British people in heaven. There'll be no Jews in heaven. There will be children of the Lamb, citizens of the King and of the Kingdom. That's who will be in heaven. There'll be one holy nation. And we will no longer speak of or remember those fallen, failed, man-made kingdoms and nations of this world, because I believe at least then we will finally see that none of them meant anything and none of them stood for anything other than their own selfish pursuits and gains and riches and wealth and power, which Jesus has rejected, and that I believe we should as well.
47 years ago, so began the message of a war-weary President Abraham Lincoln. A message written on the back of an envelope on the train on the way to dedicate a battlefield where men from the North and South had died at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. 47 years ago, our forefathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now, we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. For the brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is, rather, for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, and that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Coming up next, Adam Kokresh does a Man on the Street interviews. For the record, this was not a selective group or even in a particularly conservative or pro-military area. The people were the first seven people on the 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica, California, who answered yes to the following questions. Did you see American Sniper? Do you think Chris Kyle is a hero? Would you like to do a quick interview for my YouTube channel? Adam was seeking a good age and gender variety. Adam Kokresh is an American libertarian talk show host, activist, and author of the book Freedom. He's also a decorated veteran of the war in Iraq.
Have you seen American Sniper?
Yes, we did.
Yes.
And what did you think?
It was very moving. And at the end of the movie, no one in the theater spoke. It was very quiet. And then everyone applauded. And it was amazing to see a man that gave so much of his life for our country.
It was pretty good. It was very consistent with like the book in some parts.
Yeah, I love the story. As far as the movie goes, I thought it could have been better from an action part. I would have liked to see a little bit more of the war than more of kind of the back and forth with the, you know, family and war stuff.
So you don't like the emotional, you just want the action?
I like the action, yeah, absolutely.
You just want to see people get blown up?
No, not necessarily that, but I think that...
Well, isn't that what war is?
It is. I did, yeah, I went to West Point. So I'm 100% for the purpose of the movie.
It was a very impactful movie.
What kind of impact did it have on you?
In all honesty, I didn't know that it was a movie about the person who the story is about, Chris, and Chris Kyle. And I remember when it was in the news, and only at the end really did it make sense that it was like, that was his life story, or pretty much his life story. And it was very impactful. I mean, they were playing Taps at the end. That's a way to just, draw all kinds of emotions to the film.
I thought it was amazing.
And why is that?
Because it's like so crazy how that actually happens.
Very emotional. It was sad to me. I don't know. I had a hard time watching it, but I thought it was very well done and, yeah, emotional. I don't know.
Chris Kyle is definitely a hero. I mean, my parents were both served in the army in Israel. They're Israelis and, you know, they weren't in battle, but everybody, if you can, give some input and volunteer and make a difference, and you're a hero, and that's better than sitting on your couch and having an opinion that's unsubstantiated and really just, you know, like there's no backing to.
Would you say Chris Kyle is a hero for defending the homeland then?
100%.
So you remember the scene
when it goes over there is right. So it's that by default, you know, you deciding to go over there and fight for our country, you're absolutely defending the homeland.
Yes,
absolutely, definitely.
And why? What makes him a hero?
He went over and above. He did everything for his country. He believed he was protecting us.
Yeah, I agree. He had an undying love for keeping the people he cared about safe, as well as people he didn't even know. So.
So it was because he was defending people here at home,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Do you think defending your homeland and risking your life to do that makes you a hero?
Absolutely. And it's hard for me to relate, but I actually got a draft bill sent to me from Israel because I'm an Israeli citizen, and I didn't go to the army over there because I was in college. So, you know, in some respect, in hindsight, I think about it, wow, I should have made a difference in that way. But I'm making a difference here in America. I'm adding to the economy. I'm giving jobs to people. I'm making money for people. And, you know, that's a different way of participating in society. A lot of people are just apathetic, and they just sit on their couch, and they think that their opinion, is going to do something, but really taking action is what does something.
I believe he was protecting our nation in a time of war.
What was the threat to our nation?
Terrorism.
From Iraq?
From Al-Qaeda, from different terrorist groups, not in just one country, all over the place.
When did Al-Qaeda come to Iraq?
They're in Syria. They move around.
Well, this is an important question because you're saying that you support him being, going after Al-Qaeda in Iraq. So when did Al-Qaeda get to Iraq?
Never in Iraq. But I'm really glad that Saddam Hussein was taken out of power because he actually had plans to attack America, whether people realize it or not.
What were those plans?
When we went in there, we found the plans.
Like the weapons of mass destruction?